Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 22nd, 2005. This session, Bland Words and Boring Prayers, presented by Kata Schwen in the Fireside Room, disc number SCK-2005-10. Let's listen in.
Burning,
I guess. My name is Kata, and when I'm not here at Holden, I live in Iowa City, where I study at the Iowa Writers Workshop, and will be teaching creative writing this fall. And I've been very interested, the more that I've gotten into poetry, on some of the sort of differences between poetry and prayer, and sort of how they interact with one another, or repel one another, or whatever the case may be. So today what we're going to do is do a brief little exercise, do some discussion, and then get into a specific poem and kind of try to sort out some of these issues through studying a poem pretty closely. But for the first 5 minutes or so, I'm just going to give you a couple lists to make, things to brainstorm. And all I want you to do is I'll just give you 2 minutes, and you just write down as many as you can. Not complete sentences, but like, for instance, if I was going to say fruit, you know, just apple, orange, banana, whatever comes to mind. And then I'll tell you when to stop. Does that make sense? Okay. So your first thing to write about is, and we talked yesterday about being specific, that it's important in poetry to be as specific as you can. Objects, make a list, as many as you can, as fast as you can. Objects in and around your childhood home. And try to be as specific as possible. So if you're going to talk about the yard and a tree in the yard, say what kind of tree. Say if there was a swing on the tree. But try to just objects as fast as you can. Go. Okay, and stop. Okay, your next list is going to be places, especially thinking globally, or in the United States, that you have visited, or places that you have loved. So you could list a place that you visited but you didn't love. And again, try to be as specific as possible. So if you're going to say Paris, say, you know, where specifically in Paris. If you know the name of the cafe, say, you know, as specific as you can. So as many places as you can write down. Ready, go. Okay, and stop. And the last one is daily tasks or habitual activities that you would do back at home, sort of just so that we're all listing them in a similar way. If you can, try to start with, as you make this list of activities, start with a verb in the present tense, and you can kind of do what you want from here, and then maybe add like a preposition. So for instance, like, so things that I do on a daily basis, brush my teeth below the bathroom light. I swing near the apple tree. Do you kind of get the pattern here? I comb my hair in the bus. I'm trying to get you to say specific verbs of things you do. And you know, unique and unusual verbs are always encouraged. But also to be a little bit more specific in where it's happening or who you're doing it with. I do this with this person, just to sort of, so we're all kind of doing the same pattern. Does everybody make sense? Okay, go. Okay, and stop. Now I want you to look back over your three lists, and from each list, choose one thing, one object, one place, one daily task kind of sentence that you think is the most unique to you, or the most kind of random or bizarre, ridiculous, something that you think that nobody else probably wrote down. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay. Now I just want to go around the room. We can either do this in order, or if people feel more comfortable doing it out of order, but I want to get your circled thing from each category, and we're going to write them up here. So are people okay going around the room? Is that all right? Okay. Paul, give me your favorite object.
The maple tree in our front yard with the highest rag.
Okay. With highest rag?
Yeah.
Okay, next.
just going to try to keep writing.
Next person?
Yeah, next person.
Brown and blue triangle dotted wallpaper.
With brown and blue?
Brown and blue.
Whoever's next?
The muddy banks of the mill race.
Muddy banks of what?
Mill race.
Eugene?
No.
Mill race? Oh,
yes.
Okay. Next.
Big red tricycle.
Big red. Okay. Next.
My dog Cookie.
Next.
A farm horse.
Farm horse name before? Did it have a name?
Prince.
Prince.
Well, it only means something to me, but Mr. Peterkin's old blue car.
Mr. Peterkin's old?
Old blue car.
Mr. Peter old blue car?
Mr. Peterkin's old blue
car. Mr. Peterkin's.
Yeah.
That's his name. Great. Next.
My mom's mud-colored high heel shoes.
Ooh, great. Next.
A dilapidated wooden farm wagon.
Mm. Next.
Too many rows of green beans.
Too many what?
Rows of green beans.
Too many rows of green beans. Next.
The pink-headed monster.
Hope that wasn't me. Okay, next.
The storage closet with my kite in it.
Ooh. Okay.
The chain link fence along the backyard bordering the playground.
The Red Bank Barn.
Red Bank Barn?
Yes.
Okay. All right, next list. Let's start with that. So we're going for a place you visited or loved.
Just a place, huh? Yeah. Under the bridge on the Rum River.
Cherries at on the hillside of my mother's exchange family's farm in Germany.
Can I say
that's great. Whatever, however you want to create that.
How about
under the Chutes River.
Spell the Chutes.
DESCHUTES.
Ned?
Havana Harbor, Vanuatu.
Havana Harbor where?
Vanuatu.
Are you a survivor?
Wait, say that, I'm sorry.
V-A-N-U-A-T-U.
Okay, got it. Nice.
Parc Mont-Royal in Quebec. Parc Mont-Royal, Mount Royal Park. In
Mount Quebec. Royal Park, I'm gonna do that. So okay, next.
The mango tree by the drain.
Second beach at Trail's End.
Okay, next.
The Pagoda Visitor Center on Mount Redding, 500 feet above the city.
Center on Mount Redding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next.
The Oslo Harbor.
Next.
The Boardwalk in Duluth.
Next.
The chapel at Bishop's Lodge in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It happens to be the chapel used by the bishop in Death Comes to the Archbishop by Locata.
Next.
Charleston below Broad.
Charleston below Broad?
Broad is a street.
Okay. Okay. I know this is taking a little while, but it's actually going somewhere, don't worry. Okay. And now the last one, the braces.
Cut dead raspberry bushes on my back.
Cut or caught?
Cut.
Can I leave it at cut dead raspberry bushes?
You can leave it any way you want to.
All right, Glenn.
Wax my dreads under dim light.
Next.
Playing guitar on my bed.
Next.
Put on my gym clothes in the dark bedroom.
You'll see why I'm laughing. Okay, next.
Work out at the Lance Armstrong Fitness Center.
Can I just say it, the Lance what?
It's the Lance Armstrong Fitness Center. You can call it the Lance.
At Lance Fitness Center. Okay, nice.
Replace timing belt on old Toyota.
Good.
That's a daily task.
Takes a whole day.
Next.
Say morning prayer under the sequoia.
Sing what prayer morning?
Yeah.
Next.
Brushing my teeth in front of the mirror.
Next.
Water our llamas and sheep in the back pasture.
Oh, yeah.
You're just going to say water llamas and sheep. Is that okay?
That's great.
Next.
It's kind of been used, but brushing teeth under the warm shower spray.
Okay, can I see? Can we do bathing under the warm shower spray?
Or we could do walking briskly with an overactive black lab.
Ooh, good. Next.
throw the fox tail with Peter on the grass island.
Next.
Eat breakfast with whomever's up.
Wind the antique clock on the mantel.
Okay, next.
Create a meal with leftovers.
Okay, now, with a wave of my poetic wand, we're going to turn this into a prayer. Okay. I know, you maybe thought I was going there, but, okay. So listen really carefully to how I'm going to preface each of these sections as we go through. It'll make sense pretty quickly. Okay, so here we go. Dear God, thank you for the maple tree with the highest rag, the brown and blue triangle dotted wallpaper, muddy banks of the mill race, the big red tricycle, our dog Cookie and Prince, the farmhouse, Mr. Peterkin's old blue car, and my mother's mud-colored high-heeled shoes. Thank you for the dilapidated wooden farm wagon, for too many rows of green beans, for the pink-headed monster, the storage closet that hides my kite. Thank you for the chain-link fence bordering the playground and the red bank barn. Please bless our brothers and sisters around the globe, under the bridge on the Rum River, on the top of the cliff at Dingle, in the cherry grove in Germany, in the malaria eradication office in Thailand, on the Daisy Rock on the Deschutes River, in Havana Harbor in Vanuatu, on Mount Royal Park in Quebec, below the mango tree by the drain, on the second beach at Trail's End. Bless our brothers and sisters at the Visitor Center on Mount Redding, in Oslo Harbor, on the boardwalk in Duluth, and in the chapel at Bishop's Lodge in Santa Fe. Bless all of those in Charleston below Broad, okay? Remember us, God, in all that we do, as we cut dead raspberry bushes, wax our dreads in the dim light, play guitar on our beds, put on gym clothes in the dark bedroom, work out at Lance's Fitness Center. Bless us as we replace the timing belt on old Toyotas, sing morning prayer under the sequoias, brush our teeth in front of the mirror, and water our llamas and sheep. Remember us as we walk briskly with our black labs, as we throw the foxtail with Peter, as we eat breakfast with whomever's up, as we wind the antique clock on the mantle, and as we create a meal with the leftovers you have given us, okay? So that was you guys. Okay, so do you see, so we've got, you know, pretty decent prayer going on there, basically, what you guys brainstormed. Okay, so, but now I'm going to turn it into a different kind of poem. We did love poems yesterday. So this is a poem of perhaps unrequited love. And the refrain in this one is, my love, how I love you, why won't you return my calls? I brought you the maple tree with the highest rag, the brown and blue triangle dotted wallpaper. I brought you the muddy banks of the mill race, the big red tricycle, my dog Cookie and Prince the farmhouse. I brought you Mr. Peterkin's old blue car, my mother's mud-colored high-heeled shoes, and the dilapidated wooden farm wagon. I brought you too many rows of green beans, the pink-headed monster, the storage closet with the kite and the chain-link fence bordering the playground. I even brought you the red bank barn. My love, how I love you, why won't you return my calls? I followed you under the bridge on Rum River. I followed you to the top of the cliff at Dingle. I followed you to the cherry grove in Germany, to the malaria refuge. I followed you to the Daisy Rock and the Deschutes River, to the Havana Harbor or in Vanuatu, to Mount Royal Park in Quebec, to the mango tree by the drain, to the second beach at Trail's End, the Visitor Center on Mount Redding, Oslo Harbor, the boardwalk in Duluth, the chapel at Bishop's Lodge in Santa Fe, in Chesterton below Broad. My love, how I love you. Why won't you return my calls? My love, how I love you. Why won't you return my calls? I watched you as you cut dead raspberry bushes, as you waxed your dreads in dim light, as you played guitar on your bed, as you put on gym clothes in the dark bedroom, as you worked out at Lance's Fitness Center, as you replaced the timing belt on your old Toyota, as you sang morning prayer under the sequoias and brushed your teeth in the mirror, as you watered your llamas and sheep, as you walked briskly with your black lab, I watched you throwing the foxtail with Peter, eating breakfast with whomever was up, and winding the antique clock on the mantle. My love, I even watched you create a meal with leftovers. Why won't you return my calls? Okay, so basically here we have pretty much similar content in both of these two things that we just did, right? But with a different results on both ends. So this is just to help us kind of get at the discussion, and I'm sorry that I don't write faster, but on sort of what are the differences between poetry and prayer? And the first one that we did here was, you know, pretty close to, I would say, it was a prayer. And the second one, some might call a poem. So, so kind of throw out some of your thoughts here. What are the differences as you see them? And I'll let's do it this way. Who, okay, if you're writing a prayer, who is the audience?
God.
Okay, anybody else?
Perhaps a worshiping community.
Okay. So would you say that you're directing the prayer to them, that some prayers are written?
No.
They might hear it, but it's probably not directed to them.
Right,
And I should clarify here that when I say prayers, I don't mean the prayers that we speak aloud or that remain unspoken in our hearts. I'm talking about, like, written prayers. Okay, God, anybody else? Are there prayers written to anybody else? I mean, in the Christian tradition I'm going to go with here?
Jesus, the Spirit.
Jesus, okay. How about Mary?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it ever legitimate to direct prayers to people who have gone before us, or is that getting in sketchy territory?
I think there's often prayers to the saints.
There's what?
Prayers to the saints.
Saints, okay.
I mean, don't you pray to St. Anthony if you lose something?
Say that again?
You pray to St. Anthony if you lose something.
Okay, great. Okay, how about if it's a poet? Who's the audience?
Still might be God.
What?
Still might be God.
Still might be God, okay. Could be God. Who else?
Your lover.
Lover? Who else?
Critic.
Critic?
Creative writing teacher.
Ultimately, I'd argue that the audience is whoever kind of ends up reading the poem at some point in time, right? So, like, reader in general. Although there's sort of two levels at which poems work. I would say they're always at some level directed to a reader, but then the poem itself might pretend to say, oh, maple tree, you're so beautiful, right? So in that sense, it's directed at the tree, but in the sort of greater sense, it's always aware of its readership, right? That can be large. Okay, how about the tone of a prayer? Does that make sense what I'm asking? Like, and if it's easier to first answer poem too.
Usually it's serious.
Serious? Okay. And Antonio?
Well, plaintive, but I guess poems can be also.
Okay.
Praise or petition.
How about, the poem that we just created out of those lines, what was its tone?
Humorous.
Humorous, okay.
I'm sure God finds some of my prayers pretty humorous. So.
But do we often write prayers that we are trying to have be humorous? Or I should say, maybe I would use the word ironic. Do we write ironic prayers?
Ironically.
Do you think? Throwing that out there. In terms of what we might read in a worshipful situation.
Sometimes, like at Holden, when we bless odd objects,
okay,
there can be some kind of
ironic
tone for a poem,
okay,
or a prayer.
Okay, so in odd situations, okay. What other tones might you hear in poetry or in prayers?
How about anger?
Anger, in which one?
Either.
I don't know if it's part of tone, but sometimes prayers are written almost with a desperation.
Desperation, okay.
Or humility.
Okay.
I think prayers sometimes ask for things.
Okay. So let's get, actually, okay, now we're getting towards another question which I want to ask, which is purpose. Like, why do we write prayers and say them? And one, asking for things. Why else?
Gratitude.
What else?
Praise.
Intercession.
What? How about poems?
Penitential, I would say.
And poems? Purpose?
Try infinite.
Okay. But we might, they might have the purpose of delighting, entertaining, provoking. So probably, let's see, there's one more. Oh, okay. Last question is diction. That is, what sort of words are okay or not okay?
I usually don't swear in a prayer.
Okay, so...
Profanity.
No, profanity.
You usually keep a prayer free of metaphors that are symbols that aren't really well known.
Okay, so that there's sort of an accessibility that we
yes,
like to have.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like, it's okay to say like Christ the Lamb, and everyone knows you're talking about Jesus.
That's okay. So accessibility both in like specific words
mm-hmm.
that you want to choose, but some words you might find in prayers that you wouldn't find maybe as much, that are very common words
mm-hmm.
that we find in prayers a lot, but maybe we don't find as common in poems. How about poems for diction? Are there any rules?
Doesn't seem to be.
No, precision.
Paul read a great, will you say the beginning of that poem that you read about the Paris peace talks? That's the first line. Paul's read his class yesterday. Okay, so in some ways the diction for poetry is infinite as well. And I wanna, the other tone one that I wanna add here is sincerity. I think that to a certain extent, except, and even if we're blessing bizarre things at Holden, there's a sense that we're there because, you know, we want the bus to keep running. Like, that's important to us. And so that we have kind of that a lot of these, that our prayers are a little bit more limited. We have more limited guidelines for prayers than for poems. And my question, as we read this next one, this poem, prayer, and talk about it, is, are these restrictions good? Should we try to broaden them? When is broadening them okay? When is it not okay? Which of these things might help us as we pray? Is there anything that we can learn from the wider boundaries of poetry that we could insert in prayers, in worship, to make it more worshipful? Does that make sense, kind of where we would be going with that a little bit? We'll get back to it in a second, but I want to pass out this poem. This is by Jory Graham, who often labeled as a difficult sort of poet. We might need to share, but I think there should be enough. And just because this moves a little bit in an odd way, I just kind of want to tell you a little bit how the poem moves. It's kind of three sections. We get a metaphor about minnows at the beginning. Then she's going to tell us what that metaphor means to her. And then we're going to get a final image of the speaker on the beach with some sand. And we'll get more into that. But we get a very long metaphor of the minnows first, and I'm going to kind of ask you, delve into that a little more. But I think I like this poem. I'll say that. Prayer. Over a dock railing, I watch the minnows, thousands, swirl themselves, each a minuscule muscle, but also without the way to create current, making of their unison, turning, reenfolding, entering and exiting their own unison in unison, making of themselves a visual current, one that cannot freight or sway by minutest fractions, the water's downdrafts and upswirls, the dockside cycles of finally arriving boat wakes, there where they hit deeper resistance, water that seems to burst into itself. It has those layers, a real current, though mostly invisible, sending into the visible minnows, arrowing motion that forces change. This is freedom. This is the force of faith. Nobody gets what they want. Never again are you the same. The longing is to be pure. What you get is to be changed. More and more by each glistening minute through which infinity threads itself, also oblivion, of course, the aftershocks of something at sea. Here, hands full of sand, letting it sift through in the wind, I look in and say, take this, this is what I have saved. Take this, hurry. And if I listen now, listen, I was not saying anything. It was only something I did. I could not choose words. I'm free to go. I cannot, of course, come back. Not to this. Never. It is a ghost posed on my lips. Here. Never. Okay, so somebody talk a little bit about these minnows. What are they doing? What kind of picture is she painting of their behavior?
Created for me just not too long before I left home, a week or 10 days ago. I live on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
My wife called me because there was this large, swirling black mass along the seashore.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got down close, you realized that there were catfish, about 3/4 of an inch long.
Okay.
The whole blob looked like an amoeba.
Okay.
It was swirling. Occasionally one would get lost and go the wrong direction.
So that sort of making of their unison, turning, reenfolding, entering and exiting, that sort of sense of great. What else?
I like that they make their own current, but it doesn't affect the current of whether it's a tide or a river or the lake's waves. They change that. Even in the least.
So their unison creates its own current, but it's at the same time held in this greater current.
Yep.
It's actually the thing that's kind of buffering them through the water. So what is this a metaphor for? Or is it?
There's an element of freedom, but not entirely certain about it.
Yeah. So there's the freedom of the minnow's movement, like Paul's saying, but at the same time it's trapped within greater movements that it can't control.
If you sat on the dock or on the shore and you can see that boat, the boat wake, I love that's a great instant.
Mm-hmm.
That boat wake is coming and you know it's coming. And here are these little minnows swimming in there and they can't, that wave, that current from the boat wave is so big they can't resist it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just, I don't know, they break up, but they change.
Mm-hmm.
And their little unit of little black cloud or whatever they are, is different from then on.
It's like he's saying the determination of each individual minnow is yet inseparable from this whole that gets almost inadvertently created and,
mm-hmm.
and moving. And I guess because of the title of the poem, you can't help but wonder, is that the way he's seeing prayer? Either the diversity of everybody's prayer or the diversity of all the different prayers one person utters, just coming together into this inadvertent but inexorable stream.
Yeah.
Or moves that way.
Or if not, I mean, I think you could even push it to say that not only is it our specific prayers, but maybe ourselves as
mm-hmm.
a community, that we're each this minuscule muscle that has its own volition and power, but that somehow coming together, I think Jim pointed out, they don't always necessarily know where they're going and there's some movement in different directions, but that we are a greater body, and yet at the same time, we're we're sending through a real current, though mostly invisible, sending into the visible, arrowing more motion that forces change. So that I think a possible interpretation people can argue with is that that is God, or what is unexplainable, or faith, or whatever, that in the invisible that's shaping us, that's directing our movements, even as we're moving on our own within that, as single persons and as a greater body. Do people buy it? What do you think?
I think a lot of times we see prayer as maybe giving us some power to determine our own destiny, like those fish think they're, you know, it appears that they're,
yeah.
But then that really prayer is hopefully helping us, not changing God, but changing us, so helping us to adapt to the current that comes and changes the configuration.
Great. That's great. I love that a lot.
And there's almost a sense of surrender, because mm-hmm. I was struck over and over again by the line, nobody gets what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And which is the exact opposite of what you think anybody's going to say about prayer.
Yeah. Right.
But it ends up, and yet you look into your life at that moment that you read that and you say, oh yeah, that's really true. You know? It is not that it's sooner or later becomes not about what you want.
Right. So do you buy the rest of that then? Nobody gets what they want, never again are you the same? Do you guys agree that the longing is to be pure, what you get is to be changed?
Mm-hmm.
And does that ring true for you?
I don't know what they mean by the longing is to be pure. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people long to remain constant in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It might.
Yeah. What other
people's
interpretation of the word
pure
there?
Yeah, I can't help but wonder if it isn't so much a purity of motivation, except that in the end, it almost becomes, well, I guess if you use the minnows, it's movement just for the sake of movement. And in the case of prayer, it's desire. Just because you desire, and it almost doesn't matter what you're praying for,
mm.
or if you're even uttering words alone, or if you're just saying, I desire.
That's great. We could spend the whole class on this poem, I think. I think it's complicated, and it deserves that in certain ways. What about this end image here, with here hands full of sand, letting it sift through in the wind? I look in and say, take this, this is what it looks like. In that section, and this is the section that always confuses me about the poem, because part of me wants the poem to end with, the longing is to be pure, what you get is to be changed. And I'm like, oh, great ending. And then it starts up again, and I'm like, ooh. And then there's this, like, I can't, you know, like, because if it ended there, like, I get it, I feel really good, like, I'm almost crying every time I get to that line. And then it keeps going, and then we get this image of these hands full of sand, and I look in and say, take this. This is what I have saved. Is that the sand? And if I listen now, I was not saying, who is she talking to at this point? What is the this? And at the end, is that never a positive thing or a negative thing? What's being said to us? Or who is it being said to? Any ideas are great, because I don't know a lot about this.
Well, I think that part of it is that the three parts may coincide in some loose way with the three different ways one can take the word prayer. I mean, one can take the title prayer to mean this is a prayer, right? And the last part seems like one. One can take it that it's a poem about prayer, and so one characterizes prayer in the part we were just looking at, and one can take it the third way to be one who prays, a prayer. So it can be about one who prays, it can be about prayer, or it can be a prayer. And
mm-hmm.
it seems to me that there's a little bit of all three of those things in here.
So what is, if
the last part,
the last
seems
part
to be more like a prayer.
Yeah.
So which part for you is about the prayer?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure exactly. Part is about the prayer, but I think that the last part is a prayer.
Okay, in what sense?
Well, when she said, take this hurry, listen, I was not saying anything, it was only something I did, I could not choose words, et cetera, et cetera.
That's an explanation?
Yeah.
Okay.
And an element of penitence to it.
Mm-hmm.
And also free will.
Yeah.
I think it's a life of prayer, not words at all. And you know, what's, I don't know, who says, is it Jesus? It says, pray unceasingly. And what that means, I mean, nobody does that. But your whole life is a prayer. And I where I get that is, this is a question. And if I listen now, listen, I was not saying anything. And that's how I read that. And so that's not it. I wasn't talking to it. It was only something I did. And so this whole life moves on. I can, of course, come back. And this thing on my lips now, no. Here, never. It's always moving on. It's a way of life, I think.
So that sense of time is progressing forward.
Well, it's my life, and I'm my life is a prayer, and I'm praying on. I like that, the praying unceasingly. Mm-hmm. Unceasingly,
yeah.
It's always this, and it's the way I live. And I get that from it. If I listen, isn't that a question? And if I listen now,
yep.
Listen, I was not saying anything. But a lot of ways to read that.
No, I mean certainly. So, but you read it also as sort of the act of prayer directed to God at the end. In this act of praying unceasingly, you would say. Is that right?
Without words, though. This is my life. And my life...
But offered to God, that this is that these statements are...
Except for the statements part.
It's tricky.
Not these statements, but this is my prayer. Here I am. You know, I run, I do dishes. That's
mm-hmm.
my prayer.
Yeah.
No, Kate, I hear a certain humility, too, in that. It's almost an acknowledgement that the prayer seems to be coming from not me. I have this sin, but you know what? It's slipping through my fingers faster than I can hold it. I have I listen to what I'm saying and then figure out that I'm not saying anything. So where's it coming from?
Yeah.
It's almost a sense of, you know, in the end, it's happening, but it's not something I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's something that's coming from somewhere else and going away faster than I can figure out what it is.
That's a beautiful image.
Well, I was going to say the whole, you know, act of watching these minnows
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and making that metaphor of faith that she does in the poem and somehow saying, you know, is this what prayer is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't say anything. You know, it's just what I was doing. I was just watching.
Yeah.
You know.
So it definitely brings up questions about what are we going to define
you know,
as prayer.
Yeah, and I mean, I hear the poet asking that almost.
Mm-hmm.
As...
To us, and this is kind of a question, I mean, it's titled prayer, so the question kind of becomes which of these, but I mean, it's a poem, this is the title poem in Jory Graham's book, which is entitled Never. So, I mean, is the audience God, or are we as readers the primary audience? You know, who can it be both and still be a prayer?
I would vote yes, but I would also say that audience, one of the things up there is the self.
Mm-hmm.
We write
yeah.
poems to ourselves and to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And my sort of the word itself, never, I feel like a lot of times ends up with sort of a negative, not necessarily negative, but a pretty harsh and commanding word. Like, never do that. It should never happen. Like, drawing a very firm line or boundary. But here it's, I think as Paul's saying, kind of talking about time, right? I can't come back to this. Never. It is a ghost posed on my lips. But then the final gesture in the poem is an offering here. Never. What does the gift of that word or that concept mean?
I have no idea, but I wrote down right away, here, never, there, always. I don't know why I did that, but I did.
Mm.
It seems to me it's an offering because when the... when she's talking about the minnows and the way that they change, once a prayer is offered, we, you know, we're moving in our own currents, making our own decisions, but once you get that greater current that it would seem she's alluding to God is that greater current, then you are forever changed. And if that is the moment that she's coming to God in this poem, as soon as I offer it, as soon as the sand leaves my hands, never again, I recognize that this moment, this is the end of it, Mm-hmm. I will never be the same and never come back to where I just was having uttered this prayer.
I wonder if there's some connection being drawn. You know, I wonder if when she's talking about the current that the minnows are in and being broken by the boat wakes, if the current itself isn't time, and if then there isn't some thought that prayer somehow transcends the circle of time, off time.
So that current could definitely be time and we and our movement through it, or our inability to move, its movement through us, I guess, instead. Yeah. So I guess we now have, you know, like 3 or 4 minutes here. And people can kind of take this in whatever direction they want. But a question that definitely is, that I wonder about is, this is a poem that's entitled Prayer, and I think it's a pretty difficult poem in a lot of ways. There are difficult things about it. It might be hard to be sitting in church and to hear it. Would it be appropriate in this to, if we change the I to we watch the minnows? Listen, we were not saying anything. It was only something we did. We could not choose words. We are free to go. We cannot, of course, come back. I mean, what are our definitions of what we could use as prayers in church? And based on the definition that we sort of have here, could it be changed or broadened in any way to include more things?
Depends on which church.
What?
Depends on which church.
Depends on
which
church. Depends on which church, okay.
Which type of service.
Which type of service, okay.
I think when you're doing communal prayer, you have to be very aware that you're shaping the community of faith.
Okay.
That you're saying these are the words of the community, and it has a shaping factor. So I think in some ways, poetry, is inherently different.
How?
Just because it's not poetry, as I understand it, especially, you know, reading poetry, has a very individual, you respond to it as an individual.
Okay.
And I think in prayer we respond to as communities.
Okay. So what if, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate.
I love
throw
it.
Throw another ball at you. So if we're talking about great art, and Peter Mercer Taylor kind of began to talk about this in some of his classes as well on hymns. The argument can be made that art that's really good, successful, touches a broad range of people, right? That a lot of people manage to find themselves within it. And also that it challenges us, that it's difficult, that it's hard, that it asks questions that we have to wrestle with. What would happen to us as people of faith if we started including more of that into our worship life? Or is that not an appropriate place to be wrestling with those kinds of things? Should it, as you're saying, be a communal voice that we're more, in some ways, comfortable with, that we feel speaks for everyone, right?
Kind of that. Sure. Well, I don't think you're going to have a communal prayer that people are going to sit around afterwards and look at and say, well, I'm not sure what that meant.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know how to phrase that.
Yeah. I think usually communal prayers are, I know in my church, they're written the day before in the morning to address the needs of that particular community and the world. So I'm a musician and artist, and I love great art and I love great poetry, but I think that there's an immediacy to creating the prayers for the community that is, that's why I don't like those kind of manufactured prayers that come and we just say them. I think that like the prayer of the church needs to be something that is specific to the people and the community and the world and the events that happen in a contemporary way.
So there should be sort of like a constant creation of prayers
that speak to the community
and
immediacy.
And hopefully have someone with good language and poetic skills to write them.
Okay, good language and poetic skills. Now that gets a little bit, that's where we get a little bit rocky, because we have some rules about diction. Could our prayers, like the ones that we say would use more than once, could they be improved upon? Like, are there ways that they could be made better if we used different language? Or does it not, is it like, well, God doesn't really care, so we could use whatever language we want?
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
No, I mean, I don't think God cares, but I think they can be improved upon so that more people can join in what's being said.
So an improvement would be to make them more accessible.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying?
I don't know whether it's universal, but I find it very inspiring when those very prayers you're talking about have a poetic and metaphorical sense about them, with generating a kind of rhythm or momentum or... And I was going to add, you know, one of the words that I thought and didn't offer before on purpose for prayer was introspection. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I think doing such in the presence of God is not so much addressing the prayer to God, but sometimes just inquiring in ourselves. And it helps almost as a confessing kind of thing to have, or be aware that God is present.
Okay.
So I think some of that's in here, where this author is being very introspective in the presence of God, so that it comes out both as prayer, or I should say prayer or poem, or some of both.
Mm-hmm. And I think it depends on the prayer. I mean, if we're talking the intercessions of the people, the prayer of the church, you know, to be very specific.
Right.
But if we're talking about the Eucharistic prayer, I mean, there are some gorgeous Eucharistic prayers that are poetry, that seems to lead us to think in a deeper way about what's happening among us.
Okay.
I think that's critical. It's throughout the prayer in the language of it. God doesn't need language,
right.
So it's for us. And so we... awaken something in us. I mean, we can just sit here and we don't have to give words or anything. That's a prayer. I would argue that all poems are a prayer. Not all prayers are poems, for sure.
Okay.
But I think
most poems.
All poems are prayers.
Okay. There'd be a lot of poets who would disagree with you.
I don't know. I'm not allowed to talk about that sometimes. I don't think they would.
There's a great article in the American Poetry Review from this month that's complaining about the spiritualization of American poetry and talking about how poets have been including more God language in it and that this is terrible because it so speaks mostly to the spiritual aspect of our beings and gets away from the physical nature of reality and ourselves. And so that's just kind of throwing that out there. Though the poem itself could still act.
Even the most physical prayers, if they're good, they're about the human spirit. They ain't there on the Hallmark card.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Just thinking, the lady said prayers in the church, some of them are personalized or relevant to today's current events, let's say. And I think you could take standard memorized prayers like Lord's Prayer, you can give us this day our daily bread. Give my family or the people of below the bridge in, you know, those standard prayers that we memorized as children could be made personalized.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Cool.
Now, the hierarchy may not agree with me saying that, but...
No, but that would be, yeah. Almost out of time, I would just, as you go back to your congregations and communities and start reading prayers, my only final comment would be that yesterday we wrote love poems, and sort of the lesson of that was that the more specific we can be, the more we feel that that person understands us, the more we're trying to be in relationship with that person. One of my poetry teachers said that whenever her husband, who was also a writer, would say, "I love you," she would always respond with, "Go into detail." And so I think in some ways that a little bit what Paul was saying, that if we choose to go back to our prayers as poets or as bank tellers or as doctors or as whomever, and really try to fine tune and be specific or add more rhythm or whatever it is to our language, what we're doing is helping to develop our own relationship with God, with or who we deem God to be, or with ourselves, if it's an introspective activity, that those choices that we make with language do always have spiritual implications. So that's my argument, but we can continue the conversation at some other point. But thank you all for coming, and enjoy Vespers.